On your mark, get ready, start.
Broadcasting from California and Delaware, this is the Hard Rocking Trivia Show. And here are your hosts, Mark and Danny.
All right, everybody out in podcast land, time for another episode of the Hard Rocking Trivia Show.
Woo!
I'd like to start this episode off with a review of a show I saw, three or four days ago. It was Butch Walker in Towson, Maryland, just north of Baltimore. The little small club, no seats, of course. It might hold, I don't know, 600-700 people, maybe.
Oh, like double the size of the Roxy, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, it was small. And it was about half full, maybe.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. He's been doing other shows that have been selling out in bigger theaters. Like, he played Philadelphia the night before and sold a lot more seats, or a lot more tickets. But if you ever get the chance to see Butch Walker, go see him. He's amazing. Whether you know his music or not, he plays only his own stuff, but he produces for everybody, writes for everybody. He produced the last Green Day album. He produced Fall Out Boy, Pink, just about anybody that's new today. Billy Idol, he produced one of his latest albums.
And the Lit album he plays on.
Yeah, the
cover of the Cars song.
Nice.
Yep.
He is an amazing performer, and I've been a big fan of his since Marvelous 3, and then he went out solo, and he's just awesome. He's so good, and if you like his songs, even better. But you know, if you don't know his stuff, just go see him because he's an amazing performer, and it's a blast.
Did he do any old stuff, like the stuff that I started with? I know he's not going to do any South Gang stuff. But
no, he didn't do South Gang. He did. Usually he does Cigarette Lighter Love Song, which is an M3 song, or Marvelous 3. He did a bunch of some older stuff, not a lot, but this time around he's doing like, he'll do 9 or 10 songs with the band. It's a full band show. And then the band goes off, and he has a bucket that you can put requests in before the show.
Uh-huh.
So you get these little pieces of paper, write your name and the name of the song you want, and put it in the bucket. And then, like, two-thirds of the way through the show, he goes and picks some. And it's just him on stage, so he has a piano and a guitar. And, you know, depending on the song, he'll play either one. But the first song he picked out, this in Towson, said, oh, okay, Dan Davis wants to hear Mixtape. I was like,
nice.
So, yeah, I got my request played, and he played it, and the entire crowd sang along. So I was like, yeah, okay, you're welcome.
Good one. Good thing you didn't pick a crappy song.
Yeah. The other songs that he picked out were, like, really, like, the last one he played was Father's Day. And, you know, it was all about his dad, and then this lady said, the lady that requested it was standing right in front, and she said something about her dad just died of cancer, and so, you know, Butch is crying, the girl's crying, oh man, it was a cry fest.
Jeez.
Then the band came out and they played Hot Girls in a Good Mood.
There you go. Turn it around real quick.
Exactly. Well, that was his last song. That was his encore, but he played like four or five songs after the request section. He did like 5 requests, and it was cool.
Diary of a San Fernando 6 star. That's what I would have probably requested.
I did hear, I looked at the set list. Like if you go on setlist.fm,
uh-huh.
That's a website that I use all the time to look at what bands are playing, what set lists. And the night before in Philly, he played My Way, which I heard he would never play that song again because he hates it, but he played it.
Yeah, I like that song.
it's the first song off his first solo album, and you know, My Way or the Highway, it's hilarious. But
it's there's a video for it and everything, so
yeah,
I don't know why he doesn't like it. Maybe because he thought that first solo album would take off, and it really didn't. But there's some great songs on there. And then he kind of switched things up for the second album. And then after that, you know, you just never know what you're going to get. The song quality and the songwriting is still great, but it's not all the same style. So.
Oh, man, it's crazy. You go back, you know, you get Bushwalker and the Let's Go Out Tonight's, like, whole party album. Then you get the Black Widows, and then you get the Spade album, which is completely different. And then you have Letters from Earlier, which is one of the best albums ever.
Yeah, I saw him perform in front of about 40 people with that album.
Man,
I still have the little. I think I still have the little cassette. Was it a cassette or the little promo thing they were had? Because the album hadn't come out yet. So.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's it. If anybody likes singer-songwriter type stuff, and it's not real mellow like John Denver or anything like that, it's rocked up, but. Check out Butch Walker and, you know, like Letters, his new album, I haven't gotten really into a whole lot yet. I've listened to it a few times. There's one or two songs I really like. The previous album I really like a lot. That was the American Love Story. The last song on that album, that's the other one I requested. I requested two songs, Mixtape and then a song called Forgot to Say I Love You, which is unreal. Such a good song.
Okay.
I wished he'd pick that song.
Mixtape's a good one.
Oh, Mixtape's great. It's, you know, it's about a high school guy that gets a mixtape from this girl, and he thinks she likes him, and did not like that at all. But have you seen the video to that one?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, man. I won't tell you anything about it. Just go check it out. Awesome.
I'll have to see. Let me see. Okay, a question for you. Have you ever sent a mixtape to a girl?
No.
Well, I have a couple times.
Oh, man.
I've made mixtapes for girls. Yep. For my wife now. She still saved them all. Like, oh, honey, can we throw those away? No, I'm going to keep that. Okay.
I did make a mix CD for my wife. I made it like 10 years or so ago. It was all like 70s slow love songs.
So she you did it. It's just called a mix CD. So
I did. Yeah, I forgot all about that. I made that, but yeah.
You softy.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking a mixtape back in high school. No, I never made one like.
Well, I didn't do it in high school. I did it after high school. But yeah, it's the same.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting all mushy and sentimental. We're losing our audience here. We gotta get things going here.
I know Butch's tour is almost over, but if you have a chance to see him in the future, don't miss it.
Yeah, I've seen him twice, and he's been great twice.
I think I've seen him. This might have been my 10th time seeing him.
Wow.
I see him whenever he comes to Philly or Baltimore.
Yeah, why didn't you go to the Philly show and you drove down to Townsend? How far? What's the distance between those two places?
Each one's about an hour from my house.
Oh, okay, so.
It really didn't matter. I could have seen him up in Philly. I've seen him up there before. I've seen him in a few. Saw him at the 930 Club in D.C. A few years ago. I've seen him at a couple places in Baltimore, some down in the Inner Harbor. This was the second time I've seen him in Towson.
Okay.
And then a couple times at the TLA in Philly. He's just great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's different every show. Every tour is completely different.
And it's still kind of a mystery why he isn't bigger than he is, because he's so good. I guess he gets no push from record companies or something. I mean, he should be much bigger.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know he's one of the most sought-after producers in the country.
Yeah, it's where he makes his money.
Yeah. I mean, if you see any videos he does, he's got this whole ranch in Tennessee now where he records. He's got this studio barn. It looks unreal.
What a surprise. Right. Somebody left California and moved to Tennessee. Jeez. When they leave California, they either go to Tennessee or Vegas.
Yeah.
So if you want to find a musician, that's where you find them.
Yeah.
I get
That's it. Where you'll find Butch.
All right. On that note, let's play some Rapid Fire.
All right.
Pounding the world like a
All right, everybody, let's do some rapid fire where we fire off trivia questions to each other, try to stump each other. Sometimes they're hard, sometimes they're easy. I think this time you might get one, maybe two.
Man, did you say stomp each other or stump each other?
Stump each other.
Okay, good. But if I can get all three wrong, that means I stomped you.
You stomped me into the ground.
And stumped you.
Yeah.
Well. Mine are... You might get all three of mine. Maybe
But
probably two of them for sure. But yeah, I don't think mine are that difficult this week.
All right, well, that's cool too. Sometimes I just like to do a question that I think is interesting. Not particularly hard, but interesting. Like I have a bonus question this week that's I just thought was interesting.
Yeah, what is Dana's favorite song this week? I don't know.
It's always Bruno Mars.
Okay.
Just go with that.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So I'll start off with a question for you. Who is the longest tenured member of Deep Purple?
That would be the guy who's been in the band the entire time. That would be Ian Paice.
That is correct. Yes, he's the only one.
Yeah, and he tells his bandmates that all the time because I'm the original member.
Does he?
Yeah, he does that just to mess with them. And apparently they have a new guitar player. I don't even know who it is.
Yeah, he the other guy left just like back in July, I think.
Yeah, I think because he had some medical issues or something like that. Steve Morris left.
Yeah,
been there forever, but
he's been there way longer than any other guitarist.
Right.
Yeah. So all right, well, you got one then.
Woohoo! All right, question one for you. I heard this listening to Eddie Trunk. So if you listen to Eddie Trunk, you'll probably get this.
All right.
What band became the first group since the Beatles to have their first 8 singles reach the U.S. Billboard Top 20? First 8 singles.
First 8?
Yep. From 77 to 79. Their first
U.S. band?
Yes.
Did you say that?
Yes, they were based in the U.S.
First 7 singles.
First 8 singles.
First 8 singles.
So straight out of the box from their debut. The Beatles did it, and the Foreigner
top
was in the...
20. I'll say Boston.
Close. Super close.
Is it Aerosmith?
Nope. Because Aerosmith... No, it's not Aerosmith. Remember, I said their first album came out in 77.
77.
But you're really super close with Boston.
I don't know.
Foreigner.
I was going to say Foreigner.
Foreigner, yep.
I was thinking Foreigner.
And that doesn't even count. That doesn't even count. The highest songs came off of 4. So the first 3 albums.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Hot-Blooded.
Yep, Hot-Blooded, Cold as Ice, and all that stuff. First 8 went top 20. I learned that listening to Lou Gramm was on Eddie Trunk. Sorry.
And then they had 4, which completely blew up.
Yeah. Their biggest album. Actually, I think...
Four number ones off that album?
I think there's 2. And they're ballads, too. So
Urgent wasn't one of them.
Urgent was a top... It was a big hit.
Yeah.
But, Waiting for a Girl Like You, I think, was number 1. And there's another ballad that was like number 2.
Is I Want to Know What Love Is on that one?
Oh, I think that's the next one, isn't it?
Agent, no.
I forgot. We're getting... I saw him on the 4 tour. Did I see him with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was when they were at their height.
Oh, yeah.
Lou Gramm was great. Not much of a showman, per se, but the singing quality was excellent.
Yeah, I saw a video that Eddie Trunk put on there, and he talked about how great he sounded, and I thought, no, he doesn't.
No, he's better than he was a few years ago. He was really bad a few years ago. But, you know, the guy had brain cancer, and you got to give him a break.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
He's not like he was back in the 70s and 80s, but he's better than he was. But he says he can only play a couple shows a month, so he just can't do it.
Yeah, I bet.
All right, damn. So... You missed that one, so
all right. One. Well, dang it. All right, so it's 1-0. Here you go. Question number 2. What do Steve Vai, Kirk Hammett, Andy Timmons, and Alex Skolnick have in common?
They're all guitar players.
Besides that, smart guy.
Oh, I'm going to say, give me those names again.
Steve Vai.
Okay.
You know him.
Yep.
Kirk Hammett, Metallica. Andy Timmons, originally from Danger, Danger. And Alex Skolnick from Testament.
God, it's a couple of things floating through my head. I'm going to say, did they study under Joe Satriani?
Yes, that is correct.
Whew.
Yeah, there were like four other guys I could have listed, but I didn't want to keep on going. So
yeah, it was. I was thinking that, or did they like all study at like GTI or something like that?
Yeah, no, they were all students of Joe Satriani.
Wow, I'm 2 for 2. Holy crap!
Damn. Ugh, I gotta let me go eat my Wheaties or something.
Yeah, okay, here we go. How many singles charted off of REO Speedwagon's High Infidelity album?
Four.
Four. Wow, that was easy for you. Can you name them?
Oh, let's see. No, probably not.
Can you name any of them?
The part who heard it from a friend who heard it from another you wrestling around. I can't remember the name of the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. It's called Take It on the Run.
Yeah, Take It on the Run, baby.
Come on, what's the biggest song off that album? The Power Ballad.
Oh, shoot. See, I've got Foreigner on the brain now. Thanks.
Oh, sorry. Same genre. The one you won't get probably is called In Your Letter.
Then I love that song.
And then there's two others that were pretty big.
Yeah, I don't remember the name.
Don't Let Him Go and Keep on Loving You.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, Keep on Loving You.
They played that album to death when we were in high school.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of the album back then. One of them.
And they were kind of a one-and-done type with huge albums, because the next album, Good Trouble, totally tanked.
Well, you got to think anything would have tanked after High Infidelity.
I mean, it didn't even come close. But then that album after that did okay. And then they were kind of done on the charts, like done, gone.
Yeah. Yeah, now they're living off the past, which is great.
Yeah, they can still tour, selling out sheds everywhere. What was it?
And they were great before High Infidelity. I mean, they had some really killer songs.
Oh, yeah.
But
and who are they playing with? Styx and Loverboy this summer? I think
makes sense.
They sold big numbers on that. So good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I don't know if I asked you this question or not, but it doesn't matter. I don't remember. You probably don't remember, but
I don't remember what I had for dinner 15 minutes ago. Wait, salad. Okay, good. Okay. I'm good.
All right, way to go. All right, so who wrote the Vixen song, Edge of a Broken Heart?
Edge of a Broken Heart. Well, yep. Let's see.
First big single they had.
I got two names in my head. Was it, I'm going to get this wrong probably. I'm thinking of Desmond Child.
No, that isn't.
Okay,
incorrect.
My next guess was Fee Waybill and Richard Marx.
You got it on the second one, Richard Marx.
Richard Marx.
And Fee Waybill was involved in the production.
Okay, because I know those guys are buddies, and
yeah,
I knew it was I don't like that song.
It's all right. Yeah. You know, it's there's a really cool story in his book about that song and how he brought in another guitar player to play the part because the girl in Vixen really couldn't get it.
Really? So it went against Steve Lukather.
No, I don't remember who it was.
Okay.
But, yeah, you'd think Steve Lukather. I mean, those three guys were complete buds.
Vixen is always better live than they, for me, their albums. Or they tried to make them too commercial, too AOR. But when you saw Vixen live, they were much harder. I liked them better live when I saw them than their albums.
Like, yeah.
Okay. What musical special event happened this summer in Finland? It was a musical special event that happened in Finland. It was all over the internet over the summer. Ooh, what? Guess what happened in Finland a couple months ago? Do you remember?
Jeez, I don't remember. Was it the Northern Lights set to Metallica music?
Negative. Oh my goodness! I thought for sure you're gonna get this one. The five original members of Hanoi Rocks reunited and played together. I mean, it was Finland.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because Michael Monroe had a birthday, turned 60, so he had a birthday concert in Finland. So he reunited some of it he played. He reunited Demolition 23, and he reunited the original Hanoi Rocks guys.
Well, that's cool.
I don't think they're going to do it again, but that was like a one-time thing. So get them all together, and they played. So
nice.
Oh, I thought you knew that.
No, I didn't. I hadn't heard that. That's cool.
Yeah, because you don't watch Jason Green's show, do you?
No.
Jason Green's, Waste Some Time with Jason Green. It's on YouTube. He actually had, I think, all five members of Hanoi Rocks on this past year before they reunited.
And
he
really?
Kinda, he kind of dropped in a hint, hey, are you guys going to play together again? Sure enough, they did. They played together. And he also had the same surgery that you had.
Oh, really?
The Mohs surgery. And he's on, if you go to his YouTube, he talks all about it. He had it on his nose.
Okay.
I think he had his surgery like a week ago. So he talked about getting the diagnosis, how scared he was. Went through a whole thing. But, yeah, he interviews all kinds of people. Carlos Cavazo. He lives in Vegas. So he's also done Paul Sortino. He's a lot of the 80s guys he interviews. So, yeah, check his show out. All the back episodes are there. It's quite entertaining. And
I've seen a couple of them. I've seen him do he interviewed Steve Lukather one time.
Did he? Okay.
It's kind of awkward. Because, you know, he's more of a metal guy. And, you know, he asked the standard questions. Oh, what was it like to be a studio musician? Oh, dude. It's been 30 years since he did that.
Sure was Jason Green? I don't know.
I think so.
I don't think so. Well, I'll have to look that one up.
All right.
But he's also a tour manager for Stephen Piercy. So sometimes he'll do these videos of him just what it's like to be a tour manager. And he goes to these different places and checks into motels. And one of the things he did, he was really cool. He went to the Whiskey and he takes you, I didn't know this either, upstairs from the Whiskey, I guess in the same property, right behind it, is where you can stay. And they have a little apartment you can stay in. It's really cool.
Really?
It's got all kinds of history to it. It's
like, well, that's cool.
Yeah, so we're checking out. He's got a good show.
Jason Green,
yep.
All right, I'll check it out.
Okay, and let me see. So you surprisingly missed that, which means you're...
Yeah, you won.
You won. What's me? I won for a change.
You get all the money this week.
Nice, because I could use it.
All right, I actually have a bonus question for you.
Okay, fire away.
I was just kind of strolling around, checking out Instagram. And this is for your dude that's a Toto guy.
Okay.
To see if he knows this answer.
Okay, his name is Greg Taylor. So, Greg Taylor, are you ready for this one?
It's Greg Taylor, here you go. You know the cover of the Toto album Hydra, right?
Yes. It's a guy with a sword.
Got a guy standing there with a sword, kind of a green background. Looks like he's in the cellar or something or in a alleyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Who is that pictured?
Are you serious? Somebody? Yes. I'm going to say it's Steve Lukather.
That is incorrect. Oh, wrong, wrong, wrong.
All right. Is it anybody in the band?
Yes.
Would it be Steve Picaro?
Yes, it is. Steve Picaro.
Okay. I almost said Jeff, but then I thought of the hair.
Yeah.
Steve Picaro. Okay.
Yeah. And Steve Picaro played what?
He was a keyboard player.
Yes. All right. Just wanted to make sure you knew. You were aware.
I know. All right. I could name all the original Toto guys, I think.
Yeah? All right. Let's go ahead. Because I know.
The bass player, his last name was Hungate. David Hungate. All right. Yep. Then there was Steve Lukather on guitar. Picaro on keys, David Page also on keys, Jeff Picaro on drums, and God, what is his name? The lead vocalist, funny mustache. I could see his damn face right now.
Guy used to be able to sing his ass off.
Oh, he's a great singer. Oh, and I'm blanking on his damn name. I think he lives in the Simi Valley area. What letter does it start with?
First name is B.
God, why am I thinking of Barry Brandt?
No.
I have brain fart. What's his name?
Bobby Kimball.
Damn it. Bobby Kimball, yeah. Of course.
You and I were driving to Vegas, because the only time I've ever driven to Vegas from L.A. was with you. We were driving to Vegas, and there was some casino, like, just before you get into Las Vegas, or not Vegas, but
State
right
State Line, I think. The State Line.
And giant letters, Bobby Kimball from Toto was playing there.
Yeah.
I thought, damn, we ought to stop. But We didn't.
Yeah, that's where the locals in California go. They don't want to go drive all the way to Vegas. They go to State Line, gamble, and go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, not too many people go there, but...
Yeah, well, I was in Vegas last week, and it was Vegas. You know, I didn't gamble. I didn't spend $1 gambling.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not a gambler. I did go to a Vegas Knights hockey game, which was awesome.
Yeah. Are those the craziest fans you've ever seen at a game?
Oh, my God. They are so into it. I mean, even down to, you know, with 1 minute left in each period, the announcer has to say 1 minute left in the period, right? Just like at basketball, they say 2 minutes left, right? Well, at about 1:05, everybody in the crowd says, "How much time is left?" And the announcer goes, 1 minute left in the period. And the entire crowd says, "Thank you." Oh, wow. It's hilarious.
Wow. I know a lot of rock stars go to those games. They're very popular there because it's Vegas' first pro team. So they're really loyal to that squad. And they're pretty good, too. So,
well, they beat the Winnipeg Jets 5-3 that night. Or 5-2.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. If you're in Vegas, go check out a Vegas Knights game. It's very cool.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I was like going to different cities and checking out their sports franchises. Yeah. All right, cool.
All right, well, that was a good episode.
Yeah, it was, or a bit, and we should probably play a commercial to pay for that bit.
Let me know if your guy, if your Toto dude got that question right.
I will ask Greg if he got it right. He probably did. All right, we'll see.
I don't know. I didn't know who it was. I thought it was just some dude with big hair. But
I just figured it was Lukather. Because he kind of looks like him. He had that big old afro back in those days.
Yeah, it does kind of look like him, but I didn't study the cover and go, wait a minute, let me get my magnifying glass.
Oh, okay. I wonder why they chose him. Is he the sexiest man in the band? I don't know. I don't know. Oh, here's another weird album cover one I just popped in my head. You know the cover of Loverboy's Get Lucky album, right?
Yeah, with the leather ass.
Yeah, whose ass is that?
Oh, Mike Reno?
Yeah, that's what you'd think, right?
Yeah.
It's actually a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. No. Everybody just assumed it was somebody in the band. Nope, it's a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, man. So it's a bunch of pedophiles checking out that cover then.
I don't know. Well, nobody knew because everybody just figured it was the guy, so...
Right.
And the guys don't want to see that. So nobody was really into it, I guess. Or unless the girls thought it was a dude. But it wasn't a dude. It was a girl.
All right. Well.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks for that.
More useless information on the Hard Rockin' Trivia Show. All right. So let's play Who the Hell Is This Next?
Now it's time to play Who the Hell Is This?
All right, everybody, welcome back. Time for a bit we call, I don't even remember what we call it. How about Who the Hell's This?
There it is.
That is it. Who the Hell Is This? So we get a band, either unknown, known, and we try to see if the other person can guess who the band is based on 4 10-second clips. And we'll give you some hints here now and then. Usually, I don't know, usually Mark picks some obscure Canadian band. Not Rush, not April Wine, but something.
Chilliwack, Coney Hatch, Kick Axe.
Exactly.
Platinum Blonde, somebody like that.
Yeah. So we'll see if he does that again to me. So, but anyway, this time I got one for him that I don't think he's going to get.
Okay.
Let's check it out. So go ahead and play the first one.
I'll play the first one. Hold on. What the hell was that?
You like flute, I heard.
No, I don't. I don't like Jethro Tull, so that's going to be my guess. Jethro Tull.
That is incorrect.
Okay.
Nope. This is an English band.
So is Jethro Tull.
Well, yeah, this is an English five-piece. Usually they're five-piece. They've had a lot of lineups. And this band has never charted in the U.S., though they have charted in the U.K. and a few European countries. But you'd absolutely know this band.
This is a rock band.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Let's play clip number two.
You'll see. It gets a little more rocking.
I hope so.
It's a Hard Rockin' Trivia Show.
All right. Wow, that was a nice little change there. Yeah. Definitely started kicking a little ass there. This is you said this is an English band, European band?
English
band. And it was an English band that I would know.
Oh, yeah. You know them. I don't think, I've never seen them. I don't think you have, but you would have a lot more opportunity to see a band like this than I would.
All right. Going on the fact that I've sent you some albums from this band recently, is it Magnum?
Yes, that is correct. Jerk. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have never got that in a million years if I knew I couldn't tell you the name of the song. I couldn't tell you what album it's on. But.
Funny thing is, I'll tell you that. The song is named Kingdom of Madness.
Okay.
From the album of the same name, their debut album in 1978.
Is it any good?
If you like Magnum, yeah. They went a lot better it got a lot better with Storyteller and those albums around that time.
Okay.
Like early 80s.
Okay.
You know, back when they, you know, to me, Soldier of the Line is their top song forever. I think that is for everybody, but I like this song. I like this album. It's, early Magnum.
When I first started, I'm like, what the fuck?
What is he doing? Does he even know this show?
See, I'm trying to think of other bands that have used flute. I know Heart did. On the first album, Sing Child Sing, actually Ann Wilson plays a flute solo in that song, but it works.
Yeah.
But I can't think of anybody else who plays flute besides Jethro Tull.
There's a lot of flute in like a lot of progressive bands, but I wouldn't have gone that deep, I don't think.
Yeah.
The
lead flautist in the band is.
They guess how many albums they have. Studio albums they've released.
Magnum?
20 this year.
20.
22.
Wow.
22 albums, including the one from this year.
Well.
Which I haven't really listened to yet, but.
And I don't know if they've ever played in the U.S.
I don't know.
Maybe they haven't, but I wouldn't know that. They seem to have a nice career in England, but.
Yeah, they're guitarist and singer are the same two from the very beginning.
One of them is named Clarkson, I think. Bob Clarkson.
There's Tony.
Tony Clarkson, maybe, or something like this. There's a Bob and a Tony.
Bob Catley.
Okay.
And Tony Clarkson, I think.
Something like that. But yeah, people love him over there. But yeah. You'd think Magnum, with a name like that, would be a much heavier band. I mean, there's heavy elements to them, but they're definitely more prog.
Yeah. Oh. And I don't know if you ever heard of the band Hard Rain.
Heard of but them, yes.
That was Magnum for 6 years.
Really?
They changed their name. Same guys. They just changed their name to Hard Rain.
They thought they would do better? Is it like
I guess. And then they broke up for a while, and then the guys said, hey, we're getting the band back together. So they did.
Kind of like when Harum Scarum became Rubber for two albums.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Didn't really work out for them, but eh. Okay.
I don't know what that was supposed to be. Rubber? And of course, I have the albums, but
sounded the same. They were still good, but I guess maybe with a different name, they thought it'd be more pop and more marketable. I guess I don't know.
I guess. Oof.
That would have been a good question. The Hard Rain, because I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
Oh wow, I'm learning something new on the Hard Rockin' Trivia Show.
Yep.
Now it's your time to learn something, because I think I got something that's a band you know.
All right.
But I don't know if you're going to know this song from the band.
All right, well, let's see. Probably they got a guy off the street to sing, so I'd have no idea who it is.
They're not from Canada either.
Oh, okay. Wow, big time hints coming.
There you go.
All right, let's see.
Yeah, I'm sure you know the voice.
Is that Love Hate?
Nope. It does sound like Love Hate. A lot like Love Hate, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, that song, particular song, came out in 1999. And the song is off the album is also produced by Gilby Clark.
So, all right. Huh. All right. Well, let me take those hints into question or part number two.
Okie dokie. Okay.
I'm going to guess, is that Love Hate?
You said that already.
Damn it. It's... Oh, jeez. I'm going to go with that saying. Is that L.A. Guns?
You are correct. That is L.A. Guns.
Yes.
And why is it L.A. Guns?
Why is it L.A. Guns?
Yeah.
Because they were in the studio and recorded that song.
Okay, but why does it sound like Love Hate?
I'm going to guess that's Jizzy Pearl singing.
Because it's Jizzy Pearl on vocals. He sang vocals on one Love Hate album. Called Shrinking Violet. The main songwriters in this album were Jizzy Pearl, Tracy Guns, Johnny Crypt, and Steve Riley. Yeah, most people don't know about that album. I mean, I barely know about that album.
Yeah, I don't know much about it. I mean, I knew Jizzy Pearl sang for them for a little while.
Yep. Can you name the other bands that Jizzy Pearl's been in besides Love Hate that he sang lead for?
We saw him.
We saw him with Love Hate.
Yeah, we saw him with Love Hate. He sang for Warrant?
Nope. I mean, it's the same group of LA bands. He sang for two more of them. They were quite popular. He's currently singing in one now.
Rat?
Rat is one of them. Who's he singing for now?
I'll say Quiet Riot.
Correct.
Nice.
This is his second time in Quiet Riot, so yep. So Jizzy Pearl is staying busy singing other people's songs.
I'd like to hear him, and maybe it's on YouTube. I'd like to hear him singing some of the classic Quiet Riot songs.
Oh, it's all over YouTube. Yeah, that's very easy to find.
Yeah, because he's very distinctive.
But he pulls it off. He can sing. Yeah. He can hit all the notes that Kevin DeBro. He doesn't sound exactly like Kevin DeBro, but it's pretty close. I guess he can mimic pretty well because he did good with the Rat stuff too. So you can find.
Yeah, because I don't really want to hear Love Hate singing. Come on, Feel the Noise.
You should listen to it. It works.
I will. I'm going to look that up because
it doesn't quite sound like. It doesn't sound like Love Hate singing quite. He sounds like Quiet Riot because they get the big vocal gang vocals happening. So, and Rudy's back in the band, so he's the only original. Rudy's not even original. He's classic lineup.
Right.
So,
but I guess if they got Carlos back, it would be a little more classic, but. That's not happening.
And it's funny because, Jizzy Pearl's been in all these different bands, and Quiet Riot and Stephen Piercy play together a lot.
Really?
They do a lot of these 80s bands playing they put three bands together, and they play all over the country. Lots of times it'll be Warrant, Vixen, and Slaughter, or it'll be like Quiet Riot, Stephen Piercy, and Bullet Boys. So they put these three. And they do quite well, too, especially in Middle America. They don't really do
it. Yeah, I mean, if you're wanting to see that kind of music, not a whole lot of bands out there like that anymore.
And it's funny because if you see these bands on the coast, especially the West Coast, they'll play in, like, the Canyon Club or the Whiskey. And the East Coast, they kind of stay away from a little bit. It's the Midwest. It's all anywhere from...
Chicago, like, Detroit.
Yeah, I'm talking North Dakota, Ohio, Iowa. Those areas, they do quite well. Put them in a field.
How much would that suck to be touring Iowa and the Dakotas?
But they're not touring anymore. They're doing the fly-ins. Flying in on a Friday, play like maybe Friday, Saturday, maybe Sunday, and then go home. Just play two, three nights a week, and then go home. So that's what they do.
That works.
You rent the equipment. You just bring your guitars or whatever, but everything else is rented.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, if there's a drum set, sometimes they just share drum sets.
Well, I would think so. Yeah. I mean,
it saves money.
Easy enough. Yeah.
And you're not because it's too expensive now with gas to hire a tour bus and a bunch of roadies and trucks and just driving around. Like, you can't do it. Fly in, play a gig, fly out.
I thought it was interesting. Butch Walker had a tour bus.
Yeah, well, he's got some money now.
he did. Seriously, go check out some of his YouTube videos that he puts on from his ranch. It's amazing. So, yeah, he's doing all right.
Yeah, I follow him on Instagram. I saw something where they're I guess they had some problems with some college kids after one of their shows or something. I don't know what was going on, but
yeah, that was the show I was at.
There were some college kids raising hell.
They were outside. They were having a disco party out in the street outside of the theater, and Butch is playing, and all I can hear from outside is booch, booch, booch,
booch, booch. It was that loud?
Ridiculous. Oh, yeah. And he started talking about, yeah, we got a disco loadout tonight. So he actually started at 8:45 instead of like normally 9:15. Because he kept saying, we got a disco loadout. And I had no idea what that meant. And so he went back on Instagram and was talking about that the night after. He said, sorry about having such an early night. We had a disco loadout. You know, a lot of kids out in the streets this week or this weekend because it was Halloween weekend.
Okay.
And Towson University is right there.
Who are the behemoth of a university, Towson State?
Yeah. The big TU.
Yeah. Woo. So I keep thinking of the scene in Slapshot where the referee comes up to the Hanson brothers while their national anthem is playing. Remember what he says?
Oh, yeah. He said, I don't want to hear anything out of you guys or something like that.
What is it? What does the Hanson brothers say? I'm trying to listen to the effing song. I can see you going outside and yelling at all those people.
At first, there was this huge, huge guy sitting at the door, right? And he's got earphones in. I thought it was his music that I could hear because I'm standing maybe 10 feet away from him. And I thought maybe he had his music up so loud that all I could hear is, but no, it was because a little while later, somebody opened the door, and then it was like, holy crap. So I don't know what a disco loadout means, but apparently there was a lot of people out on the side of the theater.
Some guy in his laptop and his giant speakers playing. I don't get the EDM thing and all that stuff. Hey, let's go see the guy in his laptop, and let's take some ecstasy and jump up and down. I don't get it.
Jump up, watch another guy jump up and down while he plays his record player.
And they pull big numbers doing that. Like, what? I want to see a band playing instruments and really singing. That's what I want to see.
Well, I think today it's more about the experience.
Oh, there's lights and everything and bubbles.
Yeah, we could dance and, oh, it looks so cute. Oh.
Instead of seeing somebody really create.
Exactly. And instead of, you're out there dancing on some kind of whatever you're on, instead of being inside and watching Butch Walker play his ass off. Tears me a new one.
Oof. Oh, and we should leave on the big news of the week. You know what was the biggest news you heard of this week that happened in
That I'm going to see Richard Marx on Friday in D.C.
No, that wasn't it.
Oh, well,
Mick Mars retiring?
Oh, yeah, and John Five taking his place.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
I guess, yeah.
I mean,
John Five is, I mean, Mick Mars is, he's okay in Motley Crue, but he's no killer guitar player. But they traded way up with John Five. He is unreal.
Well, I think Mick Mars is the perfect guy for that band because, you know, the riffs he writes are musical. It works with that band. They're memorable. I mean, yeah, he's not George Lynch or Nuno Betancourt, but he fits that band the way he plays his style.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
but whatever happened to them, you know, one, they signed a contract, never touring again. Okay, fine. You want to tour again? Okay, fine. But that they would never tour without any one of them. Well, that was bullshit, too, because they, one, Mick Mars is leaving, and two, they had the girl playing drums for a while when Tommy Lee left. So
money.
Oh, yeah. It's all, everything's money.
Do you remember when The Who retired? Do you remember when Ozzy did the No More Tours tour? Come on.
Uh-huh. And Kiss's final tour?
Oh, yeah.
How long has that been going on? I think I saw them 15 years ago in Philly on their final tour.
Yeah. So, well, people throw money at them. I mean, the promoters all around the world, since the Def Leppard Motley Crue tour did so well, the rest of the world wanted to see it too. So they threw some money at them, and they're going to go around the world together.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Throw them all the money.
Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, if you're in a band like that and you got that opportunity, of course you're going to take it.
Yeah. Yeah. But don't have the theatrics of everybody signing a contract that we're never going to tour again. What?
Yeah, that was pretty stupid, wasn't it? We all knew it wasn't. Yeah. We all knew it wasn't gonna. They wanted to do it. It's a publicity stunt, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Silly, silly stuff. And you know when I was at the taping of That Metal Show, you know who the guest guitarist was, right?
I don't remember. Was
John Five. John Five. John Five was 5 feet from us.
Yeah.
Super nice, super regular guy, super nice guy. I mean, about as regular as you can get. I mean, but the guy can play.
Well, we don't know how regular he is. He may be constipated.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, just a normal Midwest guy, super nice, talk to everybody. But he can play anything. He's played on country albums. He's a session guy. Played in extreme metal. He plays everything. So it's
yeah, I know he was Marilyn Manson guitar player. He was
Rob Zombies.
Rob Zombies. Just crazy. Now he's Motley Crue's.
God, he played.
But like you said, the guy can play anything.
He played. David Lee Roth recorded an acoustic record that he plays on. He played with Katie Lang, I think, too. I mean, just a diverse set of artists. The guy can play with everybody. So yeah. It should be interesting. It's probably going to be super easy for him. But yeah, if somebody offered you that gig, would you take it? Of course you would. It's a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're playing to, I mean, his last tour, he was playing to, 1,000 people?
Yeah, when he plays his solo band and the Creatures. Yeah, it's just, he plays clubs. And with Zombie, he played much bigger places. He usually headlined those tours with 20-some bands in them, you know.
Right. But then the next step up, touring with Motley Crue.
Yeah, when you're going to play stadiums around the world, so.
Yeah.
Should be cool.
Hey, I never would say anything bad about him taking that job. No way.
Yeah, so and I get.
But it's a huge step up for Motley Crue.
But I saw they're playing a Denmark show, you know, who's one of the bands opening. I went, damn, we should go to that one. D.A.D.
Oh, geez.
So maybe different countries, they're going to have different openers. So, yeah, it was like D.A.D., Motley Crue, and Def Leppard with some other people in there.
Holy crap, that'd be awesome.
So each time they go someplace, somebody's going to. All right.
We got to go to one of these cruises that D.A.D.'s playing and Eclipse and Gothard.
Monsters of Rock Cruise. One of these days we'll go to one of those. They just did the Kiss Cruise off of L.A. They had Night Ranger, L.A. Guns, all kinds of bands. Bruce Kulick plays with Todd Kearns and Brent Fitz, and they do all the Kiss songs that Kiss doesn't play.
Nice.
So the Kiss Cruise is pretty cool, actually, because, they opened with The Oath.
Okay.
And then they play all the stuff from Bruce's era, so that they barely play. And then Kiss plays also, but they also played, they do a set of deeper stuff. They played She, Take Me, Come On and Love Me, stuff like that, that they don't play anymore. So
does Gene handle that? He has to learn there's
a teleprompter right there. You can see it.
Yeah, with him playing?
He can play. He can sing.
Can he?
Yeah, he's okay. He's okay. He sings. He sings better than Paul does.
Well,
so
yeah, okay.
It's funny because when you see them sing now, when Paul's singing, you see Eric and you see Tommy doing lots of help there.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, they help out.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we're going. Dana and I are. We're meeting James and Lisa down in D.C. to see Richard Marx on Friday.
Rocking with the Marks. Yeah.
We have first four rows.
That should be fun.
Yeah.
People don't realize how many hits that guy has.
The guy's a monster writer.
We're done.